Finish Well Radio, where changing the world starts with changing the home, with your host, Meredith Curtis.
Hi, welcome to Finish Well Radio. I'm your host, Meredith Curtis, and tonight we're talking about economics. No, don't turn off the radio, don't turn off your computer. I want you to meet some kids that are in my economics class. They're all in high school, and they had a big surprise when they took economics this year. Before we hear about their surprise, though, I want you to meet my economics students.
Hello, I'm Jimmy, this host's son, and I'm a junior in high school. I'm 17 years old, and I like economics. It's fun, and I would also like in my future to build a spaceship that can travel faster than the speed of light.
I'm Josh Nolette. I'm 17. I'm also a junior in high school. I am best friends with Jimmy. We've known each other since we were like little babies. I think we were like 2 years old or something like that. I have been raised in the church, and I like sports, and I used to swim, and I'm on the sound team, and I love Jesus, and I love Precious Moments Answers, and I love economics.
My name is Lynette, and I am also a junior in high school, and I am in class with Josh and Jimmy, and I am 16 years old, and every year my parents and I and my little sister, we go to Tennessee, and this year we're going to Atlanta, and we sell hydroponic gardens, so that's fun.
Hi, I'm Mae Smith. I am 17 years old, and I really enjoy being homeschooled a lot. My goal is to become a museum curator or an archaeologist one day.
I am TDJ. I'm 15, and I do lawns with my dad over the summer when I'm not doing economics classes with Ms. Meredith. And that's really fun because I know how to do all the equipment now, and I can really run my own business now.
I'm Matthew Herzog. I'm a sophomore in high school. I love studying government and biblical theology. And my goal in life would be to bring America back to its roots, back to Christ.
Hi, I'm Victoria Ober. I'm 16, and I'm also a junior in high school. I came to the church last year, and I've been doing the homeschool co-op with the rest of these guys for a little while. My goal is to become an astrophysicist someday, and that's basically what I like.
Thank you, and we're going to get started. Linnea, before you started economics this year, what did you think of when you thought of high school economics class?
To be honest, I was super excited. Like, I had been wanting to take economics for years and years and years, but I also thought it was going to be, like, super hard, like, ridiculously hard, the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life. So I was getting ready for, like, no life and just economics and having my brain blown out because I couldn't remember anything, and it was just going to be really hard.
TJ, before you started economics this year, what was your thought about taking economics in high school?
Really, I didn't like it, the idea at all. I didn't think I'd learn anything. I thought it'd be really hard. Anytime anybody asked me if I was looking forward to it, I said, no, I think it's going to be hard. It's not a good idea. But I really got surprised this year when we took it, and I've really enjoyed it and learned a lot.
Victoria, what were your thoughts when you thought of taking economics this year?
Well, I'd always thought of economics as something very theoretical and impractical and complicated and not really having much to do with everyday life. But when I started studying it, actually a little bit before this class, I got more interested in it and being able to understand what grown-ups were talking about when they talked about economics was really interesting. And so taking this class has actually been eye-opening and being able to like understand how much economics affects politics and the world stage has been really cool.
Jimmy, what has your favorite thing about economics class been this year?
By far, the competition on the test. Not really. I was just kidding about that. But that is a really fun thing. But the funnest part is writing essays about what we've learned and then reading them out loud to the class and also trying to be creative with the essays. It can be a lot of fun to write essays and then, you know, critique essays and come up with crazy ideas about essays.
May, what has your favorite thing about economics class been so far this year?
I also like the competition for the tests, and I really enjoyed the stock market game. It's been really, really fun, and just, like, learning all about that and, like, different titles of companies and things like that.
And Josh, how about you? What's your favorite thing been so far?
By far, my favorite thing has got to be the naps I get during economics class. No, I'm just kidding. I don't sleep in economics class. For me, it would be all of the new concepts that we learn and how many there are, because for me, going into economics, every single thing I was learning was new, and it was not a ton of overlap. In a lot of my other classes, there's a lot of overlap stuff that I have to kind of get through to get to the new stuff that I learned, and it was just really enjoyable to learn something that was not only interesting, but was also new and challenging.
Linnea, how about you? What's your favorite thing been so far?
I really just enjoyed being in economics because I had wanted to be in there for so long. So just being able to say, I'm in economics, I'm a big kid now, that was really fun. But I also really enjoy how applicable everything is to my daily life. Like, it's not something that I have to wait until I'm 25 and have my own house and my own family to apply. Like, I can start budgeting now, and I can start applying these things now, and I can start preparing for my future more in-depthly, which is really exciting.
Matthew, how about you? What's your favorite part been so far?
My favorite part would have to be understanding what makes a nation successful in its economics and how we really all need to understand what a great form of economics is, because as we see in America today, we are turning into a more communist kind of economic system, and you all see how it's turning into $18 trillion of debt. Really just what makes the nation great in its economics.
Josh, what did you learn about inflation this year?
Nothing. No, I'm just kidding. Inflation is an excessive amount of printing of new currency. And so what I learned this year was just that the government tends to inflate the currency. They produce a ton of money in order to pay off bills that the government might have or to stimulate the economy, as they would say. And so what we learned about this year was just the effects of inflation and how in some ways it can look like this great beneficial thing, like, oh, man, now I have $50,000 instead of $5 because I printed, you know, that much money. And so it's great because I'm now rich. But in reality, it ends up hurting everybody who uses that currency, and it ends up degrading the value of the currency. And so we learned that inflation is evil, bad, no good. And Ms. Meredith had another point. Oh, yeah, it's evil. So inflation is not good.
What I did talk to the children about was the teens. It was that in Proverbs it says that differing weights, differing measures, the Lord detests them both. And so the Lord wants us to have integrity in the way that we manage our money. And the Lord has something to say about so much that has to do with economics. So right now I'm going to have each of the teens share with you their favorite book that they read this year and why they enjoyed it. So I'm going to start with Victoria, go to Matthew, go to TJ, and they're all going to share with you about their favorite book.
Well, my favorite book was called Economics in One Lesson, and it was a book that described most of the fallacies that modern economists tend to use when thinking about economics. And the main one was the broken window fallacy, which is something we'll talk about later. And I really enjoyed it because after reading it, I understood at a deeper level modern everyday economics and the way supply and demand affects prices and, you know, gas prices and milk prices and production and all those cool things.
Well, my favorite book would have to be The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx, not because I wanted to become a communist or anything, but it really teaches you how most of the world views a government, how they think that a communist system really works. But if you really look in depth at it, it's not something that God would have supported. And it shows you how a free market economy should work better if you really look in depth and compare them to. It really makes more sense with a free market economy, but yeah.
My favorite book would probably have to be Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And this wasn't written on a Christian basis, but I really liked it because it explained how even people on not very high incomes, they can be rich too, because if they have the right mindset and they handle their money right. There was some things that Ms. Meredith did tell us about the book that she did not agree with, and I totally agree with her that those things are not biblical, but that was a really good book that I enjoyed.
My favorite book was Ms. Meredith's workbook that we're going through. It's really cool because it gives like us practical ways to deal with things at our age, and it shows a lot of biblical references, and I like doing she had us find like our car and buy our first like apartment, which was really fun.
One of my favorite books this year has definitely got to be The Clippership Strategy. It is a really cool book about basically how to predict and classify hot spots and cold spots in the economy. And so the author goes through like what they are, what is a hot spot, what is a cold spot, and he goes into all kinds of in-depth classification of different kinds of them, which was really fun. And then he teaches how to keep your business safe from moving spots, because the hot spots and the cold spots move and they change places and whatever. So he talks about how to keep your business safe and how to be prepared so that when you do have a business in the future, like when I have a business, I will already know how to look at the economy, so I won't have to learn it and possibly fail beforehand.
My favorite book by far this year has got to be The Little Engine That Could. Just because of its intellectual vigor and how amazingly encouraging that book can be, it was really hard for me to read through the book and not cry. Really, the challenge was reading through the tears because my tears made it hard to see. But the book was really just inspirational, and I adored it, you know. It was just one of those books that I'll recommend to everybody, and I'll read to my kids when they get into college. It's too intellectual when they're young. But great book. I recommend it highly.
Okay, I have to intervene here. The Little Engine That Could is a picture book that the kids read to get the economic principle of perseverance. And then they wrote their own children's stories, which were absolutely adorable. And we had a lot of fun reading the story and writing the books. But I promise you that Josh can read more difficult books than he actually has this year.
My favorite book, well, actually, they took my favorite book. But my second favorite book, or third favorite book, I don't really have favorites, but one of the books I did like was, it was called A Banker's Confession. And when I first read the title, I thought like 20 years ago a banker killed someone and it was his, you know, confession about it. But apparently I was wrong. It was pretty interesting of how he explained stuff, and from a very Christian perspective, he didn't like to take shortcuts, or in a way, it was very interesting how he explained things, because he didn't just look at what would be easy on our lives and then kind of mold how he interprets the scripture like that. He just interpreted the scripture and then said, okay, the Bible says we shouldn't presume upon the future, so we shouldn't presume upon the future and go into large things of debt. And he also talked about like how it's not good to, you know, mortgage a home, and if we do, we should do it very quickly, but we will discuss that later on in this talk.
Right now, we are going to take a break, and we're going to hear from our sponsors, Finishwell Conference, and also Powerline Productions. So after these messages, we will be right back.
In all my years of attending Finishwell conferences, I found that it's more than just homeschooling. It's learning how to live.
Finishwell 2015, July 10th and 11th. Visit finishwellcon.com for more information. Powerline Productions wants to help you grow in your relationship with Jesus as you homeschool your children. Because of this, we offer a wide variety of books and ebooks about homeschooling, as well as homeschool classes like economics, finances, and business. Meredith Curtis designed this class for high school seniors and adults. It takes an intense look at macroeconomics from a biblical free market perspective and challenges students to apply biblical principles to all aspects of economics and business. Learn more at powerlineprod.com. That's P-O-W-E-R-L-I-N-E-P-R-O-D.com. Powerline Productions. Being world changers, raising world changers. You've been listening to Finish Well Radio on the Ultimate Radio Network. Now back to your host, Meredith Curtis.
Welcome back to Finish Well Radio. We are here with our guests, and we're talking about economics. And surprise, economics is fun. So we will get right back and jump in where we left off. Josh, Victoria mentioned the broken window fallacy. What is it, and how does it trick people?
I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So the broken window fallacy. Hey, don't clench your fist at me. So the broken window fallacy is, say you have a tailor, and he's in his little shop in Germany, and everything's blown up around him, but he's had this, like, nice little tailor shop that he has. By the way, we're in the middle of World War II. So he has this nice little tailor shop, and a little kid runs by and throws a rock through his window and breaks the display window in the front of his shop. Now, some people might stand on the sidelines, and they might look at that and say, well, I'm glad the little kid broke his window, because that's going to stimulate the economy, because now he's going to go out and he's going to buy a new window, and it's going to put money into the economy, and now Germany's not going to stink anymore because we're blown up. But that's not the way it works. See, because that tailor actually had been wanting to buy a new Mercedes, but now he can't because he had to shell out the $70,000 to buy that window, and so he can't buy his Mercedes. So either way, and by the way, windows are not usually 70 grand. Okay, I was just throwing out numbers there. I'm getting glares from the sidelines down here. So anyways, he had the money that he was already going to spend on the economy. The broken window just stole that money away from one industry and put it into another. So it doesn't actually do anything for the economy. It just moves the money around.
Thank you so much, Jess. Victoria, I always hear this, that war is good for the economy. Is war good for the economy?
No, actually, war is not good for the economy. The thought that it is actually a version of the broken window fallacy. People think that since prices go up during war and those sorts of things, that it must invigorate the economy somehow because we have to produce things for the army, and we have to make tankers, and this production is going up, and obviously this will must be doing good to the economy. But the reason that prices go up is because of shortages, because crops have been destroyed or production facilities have been destroyed. There's some shortage of something, of food, of water, I don't know, lots of things. And because of supply and demand, the prices go up, and that is the broken window fallacy being played out there. It's always something else that's being destroyed to put money into some other place. And it's actually bad because now not only are we losing materials and wealth, like factories being destroyed and crops being destroyed, but we lose people too. And now we have less people to produce things, to work. And so it's actually very detrimental to the economy.
Thank you. Linnea, why is debt a bad thing?
Well, first of all, debt is a bad thing because God doesn't like debt. And so God tells us to not go in debt, and he says that the nation will be blessed that lends and doesn't borrow. But in daily life, debt is a bad thing because it is a burden, and so it's really having a creditor calling you or having that extra $500 you have to pay off your mortgage or whatever, that's $500 that you can't use to pay for things that you might need, like doctor's appointments or whatever. And so it is a really hard thing to have someone, to be owing someone money. And it puts strain on a family, and so it can be a source of strain in the family, and it just doesn't really work. It's not a good thing.
Thank you, Linnea. Josh, how can adults avoid debt?
Honestly, there are things in life that always come up for every person. Things come up, say, like your kid has to go to the hospital suddenly, and so you have this, like, $1,000 hospital bill or whatever it may be, and you didn't budget for that because finances were tight, and now you've been forced to go into debt. And for things like that, there's not much of an avoidance other than having a budget or a part of your budget reserved to unforeseen circumstances.
But in life with adults, the thing is hard work, faith in Christ, and saving and wisdom. So you need to work hard to earn the money you need to get, however hard you need to work, and never, ever get lazy. Never, ever, ever, ever get lazy, because that's something that goes on to your children. It's something that you teach them. And the Bible says if a man does not work, he does not eat. So never, ever get lazy. Always work as hard as you need to do to support your families. Budget wisely. Make sure you have all that set out and have somebody, maybe like if you're married, have your wife or your husband, and you guys will be accountable to one another, or have financial counselors like your pastor and his wife, or friends like Jimmy, because Jimmy is my best friend, or like Matthew over here, or TJ. And just get people around you that can keep you accountable for money if you're not very good at budgeting or saving money. But when you are in debt, you need to cut things out. So when you go into debt, you can't live the same lifestyle you had before you were in debt. And that's kind of something that I see in America, is we get this idea, okay, well, we're in debt, we'll just keep paying minimum payments, and we'll just keep living the way we're living, it won't be that big of a deal. That doesn't work. You end up charging interest, and you take years and years and years to pay off that debt, and you end up charging yourself way more money than you originally had. If you go into debt, survive on hot dogs and mac and cheese. Cut out, you know, the extra things. When you stop at the gas station, don't buy things, just buy gas. When you are at home, don't go to stores or don't go to restaurants to eat dinner, have dinner at home. Limit your amount of drive time. Just cut out things you see in your life that you don't need. I mean, you'll find that you have a lot more money. Usually with most families, when they cut out ridiculous things that they just do because, oh, I have the money for it, there ends up being a lot of money afterwards.
Thank you, Josh. Jimmy, is it a good thing or a bad thing to pay off your mortgage early? I know you can deduct, you know, the interest you pay from your taxes. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it would be very good to pay off your mortgage early. The reasons why I think that is because, one, when you are in mortgage, you're like giving a part of your income away to just the bank. And instead, you could be using that money to further the kingdom of God, to give to charities, to give to people who are in need. Also, if you do pay off your mortgage early, you will also be able to save a ton of money off of interest. For instance, my parents are just paying an extra, I think, $100 a month in their mortgage, and in the end, they're going to be saving about $18,000 off of interest. And that is why I think it is good and wise to pay off your mortgage early.
Josh, how can kids go to college debt-free?
Well, one way, obviously, would be doing really well on your SAT and scoring a ton of scholarships to get them to pay for all of your school. And that would be something that would be encouraged highly. Do well on your SATs, study hard, do well in high school, and get tons of scholarships for college. That way you don't have to work through college. But the way to go through college debt-free, which is the way my brother did it, is you work your behind off the entire way through. You get jobs, or you get a job, and you work to pay off the difference, and you go to school and you work. Student loans are a bad deal. You'll have them for years and years and years. I know somebody who, I think he's in his 50s, and or late 40s, and just paid off his student loans. And he's been out of school for, you know, forever. Late 20s is when he got out. So, I mean, you'll have this debt for forever. Something we talked about today in economics class is that when you work for grants, when you work for scholarships, when you work through college, having a job and going to school at the same time, studying and then getting off of studying and going to work and then getting off of work and sleeping for 3 hours and then going back and studying, you're working really, really hard all the way through college. And it ends up when you graduate after 4 years of college, you appreciate what you've done. You appreciate the work you've put into an education. Like anything else, all the projects I make out of wood, I appreciate way more than anything I've ever built in my whole life. And I take care of it way better than most things. And it's just the amount of work that we put into something tends to reflect in our appreciation for it.
Very good. Linnea, a lot of people don't know the answer to this question, and we talked about it this year. What is the difference between a charge card, a credit card, and a debit card?
First of all, they're all little pieces of plastic that go in your wallet. And I'm sure you guys know that credit cards and debit cards, but you may have never heard of a charge card. A credit card is basically the card company issues you a card. They give it to you and they say, you can borrow money. You can just borrow as much as you want. But if you don't pay it off at the end of the month, we're going to shoot your interest rate sky high, and you're going to have to pay a ton of money in fees and in interest every month you don't pay off your loan. And so you could theoretically continue to rack up charges on your credit card until you've maxed out your credit card, and you could do that indefinitely, but you'd be buried in fees and you would never be able to get out. The charge card is kind of like that. Instead of you being able to roll over into the next month, the card company demands that you pay it off at the end of the month. So you can borrow money throughout the month, but you must pay it off at the end, or else you get tons of fees and they drop you. And so that's what a charge card is. So a debit card is a bit different. A debit card actually takes money directly out of your bank account. I have a debit card. I put cash in the ATM, and that cash goes into my bank account, and I have a debit card that I can use at the store. If I have $25 in my bank account, I can't spend anything over $25. And so it's basically I can only spend the money that is in my bank account. And so that's the difference.
We played the stock market game this year online, and we had a lot of fun doing it. It was a great experience. I'm going to let Marissa, TJ, and Jimmy tell you about the stocks they bought, whether they lost money or gained money, and what they learned about investing.
I really like the stock market game, and I originally bought Coke, iRobot, Amazon, and Sodexo. One of my best ones was 3D Systems Core. I lost a little money, but I gained back pretty much all that I lost, and I learned that, like, there are tons of companies out there that I kind of had to sift through and find out which ones I liked, which ones were good, and you have to do a lot of research to figure out which ones are good or bad.
So when I started this stock market game, I did really, really well. I did so well, I beat the world record, okay? So I was all over the news, okay, people. So people were paying me money to handle their stocks. The president actually took me on a parade with him, and I have to do his stocks. I'm just kidding. No, when I first did my stocks, I wasn't doing great, but I wasn't doing terrible. And some of the first ones I bought was Yahoo and Cracker Barrel and General Motors, and I think I bought some Pepsi, too. I really went down after that, declined really bad, but I bought them back up, and now I'm doing pretty good again.
I like this game. Basically, what happens is this game gives you like $100,000 of fake money, and you just have to invest it into whatever companies you want. The only thing is that you can't invest in companies that are under $5, which I don't like. I started out doing like iffy, and now I'm doing better, but the thing is that the reason is I play super risky. So I'll be losing thousands of dollars in one stock. For instance, there's a time a bit ago where I was losing $4,000 from one stock, and then right now, one of my stocks, I'm losing probably close to $6,000 right now. So, but then at the same time, I can also be gaining like $4,000 from stocks, $3,000, $2,000, and that's what I really like. And another thing that I'm also learning from this stock game is that the stock market is really unpredictable. Like I said, I lost at one point like $4,000 and $6,000, and so it can be very unpredictable, but at the same time, it has its benefits. It's fun. It's also very competitive, and so all of us just try to compete with each other to see who's doing the best, and it's a lot of fun. I like it.
Victoria, what kinds of things did you learn about managing finances in a household?
We learned the biblical way to manage households, which is slightly different than the non-Christian or non-biblical way. We talked a lot about how the roles in the husband and the wife play in managing finances. Sometimes it's only the wife or only the husband that manages finances, and then one of them dies, and the other one has no idea how to do anything, and the whole ship goes under, and it's awful. We studied this one book called Biblical Principles Under Scrutiny. It talked a lot about this, about how both of the spouses should be in on what's happening. They should both know how to handle the accounts. Probably only one would do it, but they all know what's going on, about how some husbands will say, well, women can't do that. But a lot of women are actually very good with money and can handle the records even better than the husband sometimes. But then still, the husband is always the one who makes the final decisions. He's the leader of the home. And also, we also talked about budgeting, how the first thing you do with your money is you tithe. Then you make budgets. You have a certain amount of money to spend on food, a certain amount of money to save for the new washing machine. And budgeting helps avoid debt. Like if you say, well, we only have $50 left in the envelope for eating out, so we can't actually take your entire family to Cheesecake Factory today. It also helps with planning for future events like the kids going to college and getting married, saving for a new car, or going on a family vacation, and so on and so forth.
Linnea, thinking about saving money, we talked a lot about saving money, and one of the things we talked about was bartering. How does bartering work? Give us some examples.
Bartering is basically giving things in exchange for other things instead of money. You could give services in exchange for other services, like I could replace the shoelaces on someone's shoe, and they could hang up the shirts in my closet that I don't want to hang up. If we feel like that's a fair trade, then we trade it, and we do that. And that's a barter. In my house, we barter a lot, and we actually barter a lot with Matthew's family, their mom coupons. And so their mom will get, like, tons of boxes of pasta or something, and we need pasta. And we have lots and lots of flour, and she needs flours. We grind our own flour. So we'll grind her 2 pounds of flour, and they'll give us 3 boxes of pasta or however much we think. And Matthew mowed our lawn for a while, and we'd send stuff their way and stuff like that. So it's really... it's really fun, and it helps people out in needs directly when they might not have money. So it's cool.
Great. That is very practical. And now we are going to talk about business ideas. We talked about how to start your own business. As far as our year goes, we're just in the time of year where we're talking about that. I'm going to have Marissa and Linnea and Josh talk about business ideas that they have for the future, things that they are looking forward to doing, or maybe things they're thinking about starting right now or already doing. Marissa?
I have a business plan for the future, hopefully the near future. I hope to help homeschooling moms or children with schedules. Like when, like at the beginning of the school year, I make a general schedule for the school year. But then after co-op, I would help them make a weekly schedule for so that they can get all their school done for that week before co-op.
Well, I've come to realize that I think that tutoring would be really fun. And so when I, like maybe next summer or when I graduate high school, it'd be really fun to do tutoring. I could teach the subjects that I really like. And I could also, like they said, help them schedule. And I could also help mommies organize their school room, organize their school life and stuff like that, because I've been through that as a homeschooler. And so I know kind of how it works. I could probably help new homeschool mommies or high schoolers get used to high school life and get used to the workload and just get used to scheduling. I actually currently have a business that I do. My sister and I bake bread, and so that's where the grinding our own wheat comes in. We make organic whole wheat bread. It's really fun. We sell it to people that my mom knows because we're health food nuts, and so she knows lots of people who like healthy food. We make a little bit of cash doing that, not a lot, but enough so that I can buy random things like pens and T-shirts if I want.
What I have going right now is over last year or so, a little more, I've actually been learning under my grandfather about woodworking and woodcrafting. And something that I made this past December was I made my own custom longboard out of a sheet of oak plywood. And so that gave me an idea that over the summer I can start a business making longboards that would be able to require maybe like a couple of days of work per week to fill my orders, and I could do this during college and it could be pay for college. So what I'm in the process of doing is creating a business model and saving up money to pay for this business because I don't want to go into debt for this. What I'm looking at right now is I'm going to create an online website, and I'm going to put a store into that, and I'm going to integrate in what's called MailChimp, and I'm going to start a newsletter that I'm going to send out every 2 weeks or every month, and I'm just going to have an opportunity to share with the people that are going to follow me about what I'm doing, what I'm changing, what I'm doing to try to make my product better than my competitors. My target market is going to be college students and high school juniors and seniors that are getting ready to go to college. But right now what I'm doing is gearing up for production. I'm going to start doing pre-orders in the next few weeks, and I'm going to start doing production in the next month.
very good. Years ago when my daughter Jenny Rose took this class, she came up with some ideas for being a vocal coach, and at the time she didn't do it, but a few years later she actually did start the business. I know other kids I had in economics class, when we talked about how to start your own business and we talked about making a business plan, they had this idea for an airsoft field park, and it did not work out, and honestly their business plan wasn't real practical, but they got the whole idea of what it took to start a business and the startup costs and things like that. And a few years later they started their own computer repair business, which helped a lot out for them in going through college. So this is a great thing for teens to do, whether they actually start a business right now or not, to know how to do them, because a lot of times we go through seasons in our life as adults, as college students, where we could use a little bit of extra money. And now we're going to ask some of our students to share their financial goals they have for the future, starting with TJ, then Matthew, and then Jimmy.
I have no financial goals for the future. I plan on wasting my money now as a kid and then going as far into debt as possible when I get old. No, I'm just kidding. As I said before, I work for my dad on lawns during the summer, and that is a well-paying job, actually, because we're in Florida and everybody needs to ask it. So we're literally cutting, like, the same lawn once a week. We've got a bunch of lawns, so I'm getting a ton of money in during the summer. I can get a house debt-free. Is one of my plans. Save up money for college. Haven't really decided about that yet, but maybe going to college, saving money for that, and also trying to get a good working car in the future.
What are my financial goals for the future? My number one would have to be raising up a family and debt-free, and buying a house debt-free and a car debt-free, and really just everything debt-free, because I can't imagine being in so much bondage. Really, whatever God's will for me is, and I really want to become a successful businessman, but if God calls me elsewhere, then let it be. I have great mentors in my life, like Miss Meredith and my grandfather, and just a lot of guys and girls that really do help me in my walk with Christ and with a great business model.
I have a couple financial goals. One of them is to save up for a car. Maybe like in my freshman year of college or sophomore year of college when Shine graduates and I can't ride with her. Also, later on, for another car when that car runs out and another car after that car runs out and so forth and so on. And then also save up so that I can buy a house and have all that fun stuff of repairing the house and fixing stuff that the retailer didn't tell me about. And also, those stuff are kind of like hard. And now talk about my more financial goals that are more realistic, such as the first one, saving up enough money so I can create a spaceship that travels faster than the speed of light, which may take a little bit of time, but I think I'll eventually be able to do it. The second one is saving up enough money so that I can run a campaign for a presidency. And Matthew's pretty mad because he was going to say that, but we're going to be running against each other, so. And then my other financial goal would be saving up enough money so that I can start a colony on a distant planet by using the spaceship that travels faster than the speed of light. And those are my financial goals. Hopefully, I'll be able to do the ones that actually involve getting a car and buying a house, but we'll see.
Thank you very much, and we're so glad that you're here. We just want to end by this. If all of you could just share one last financial bit of wisdom or tip that you would share with teens, something we've studied a lot about what the Bible has to say about things in your future and being wise. Just let's leave our listeners with a final word of encouragement or inspiration or financial tip.
Well, I'm going to go with the old standby. God owns everything, and he is a steward of all your money. So tithe first, and always remember to give generously and to use money for what God wants you to use it for. And, you know, don't go out and buy that tripped out new showboat that you wanted to buy to go out on the lake and, I don't know, kayak. You know, you should use it instead to do something more worthwhile to humanity.
My advice would be don't be sucked into what the world has to offer, because usually it doesn't really benefit you at all, just like credit cards and that kind of stuff. It looks tempting and it looks like it'll help, but in the long run, it really doesn't do anything.
I think maybe you should get a good friend, a good mentor to help you with your goals. You need a good role model. Like for me, it would probably be my dad. He handles money very well. But you need a good role model to explain finances to you, and you can really understand them with them and ask them questions and get them to help you out on a day-to-day basis.
My advice would be, before making financial decisions, to first always consult God about it and see what His plan for your life is, as well as your parents and other mentors, just to kind of get their feedback, try to see what you should do, like it with college and things like that.
One thing that I learned this year that I think everyone should know, it is not too early to start applying economic principles, like especially budgeting and saving money and being wise with how you spend money, because the Bible says who is faithful with little will be faithful with much. And so if you learn to be faithful with the little money that you have right now, then God will be able to bless you more and use you more in the area of finances, in spreading His gospel and in furthering His kingdom, because you will have good principles ingrained in you and they will be deep within you, and you will also save yourself a lot of pain, because I've seen people who didn't make wise financial decisions in their life, and especially in their younger years, and they're still trying to get themselves free of debt and bad decisions that they made. So start now.
All right. I have two financial principles that I'll wrap up in two sayings. Numero uno, you got to live la vida loca. And what I mean by that is that everybody needs to be radically sold out for Christ, crazy in love with the Lord, and put Him at the center of your finances. Number two, you got to risk it to get the biscuit. And that has no explanation at all. It's perfect.
I suggest that you just take this class so then you can learn everything, so then I don't fully have to answer this question. But since I do love, 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 love my mom, I will answer this question and give you some advice. First advice, as Josh said, you have to risk it. You know, don't just go for like the little goals of buying a car or buying a house, you know. Think big, presidency, the Oval Office, you know. Think just crazy things, all right. And on a serious note, I would suggest that you do give a lot of money away. On one of the books we read for teens, it talked about how us teens should be giving money away, not just away freely, but giving it to charities, providing for missionaries. And so that's what I would suggest you do, is if you do have extra money, I would suggest that you support missionaries through like GFA, Gospel for Asia, that's what that stands for, and also be able to help support families in your church, and really not just think of what stuff you can get, but think of what stuff that you can give to other people so that they can just survive and live in this world.
From all of us here, we thank you for joining us, and we hope and pray that God will bless and provide for you and meet every need. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Finish Well Radio with Meredith Curtis and the Finish Well team. Please listen in every first Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern Time here at the Ultimate Radio Network.